This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, listeners, to Postcards on the Line. I'm Haley Stoddart, your host for the week, as Christopher is busy overseeing the grape harvest. With me today is Zachary Frueling from To the Journey and Metatrex. Thanks, Zachary, for coming on Postcards.
It's strange that it's taken us this long to record an episode together, considering you're about 30 feet away.
This is very strange. Yes, it is true. Listeners, you'll have to pay attention for Standard Orbit 300, where Chris, we actually did record together, you and I, briefly. Fun little tidbit.
We've done a little bit together.
We have. Well, today we're discussing the fan response to Star Trek Picard, Absolute Candor. If you would like to participate and share your response, please post your comments in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and it will come right up. We'll create a special postcards discussion thread right before each new Star Trek episode. Leave your comments and they just might get read on the air. As of this recording, we have 334 comments on the postcards thread, which is a 2% increase from our last episode. Listeners, keep the comments coming because we love your feedback. So, Zachary, what did you think of the episode?
You know, generally, I really liked it. It was fun to learn a bit more about Romulan culture and subculture, really, with this, for lack of a better word, samurai religious organization. I don't know quite what to call them. But it was interesting to see a different variety of Romulans. I'm used to seeing Romulans be so militaristic. It was fun to see some meditative, friendlier, I don't know quite how to describe them, more open and friendly Romulans than we're used to seeing, even despite all the cultural problems they're having with some latent and emergent racism on New Romulus or whatever we're going to call that planet. I like any episode directed by Jonathan Frakes. He always does a great job. For me, the thing I'm really struggling with Picard in general is the sort of convolutedness of the plot. You know, I really like character-driven shows, and there's plenty of character moments, but the sort of convolutedness of what's happening with the show from episode to episode to episode, that's not what I find terribly interesting about the episode. But there were plenty of good character moments inside the episode, so this was a really fun episode for me. And I get to see Seven of Nine from Voyager, my favorite Star Trek series hitherto.
Yeah, so this episode definitely was interesting. I like that we finally have an episode that is not so much, it's still kind of tied with the first three, but starting to develop a little bit more of the storyline, and I'm hoping that we're getting more going forward. But Zachary, would you like to get us started on some of our feedback?
So we're going to start with the positive comments, and Peter Setnicker says, "Now this is Star Trek. I thought this did well as a great standalone episode, as well as continuing the story. Having read most of Last Best Hope, by now it was easy to understand a lot of the dynamic on the planet and background. It was an excellent choice to show Picard facing those demons for both himself and the people he failed, quote-unquote. Also the ending, amazing. P.S. Starting to get a Cruel Intentions vibe from Narek and his sister. I know the step-incestuous thing is in right now in the adult industry, but this is ridiculous." That might be more information than I ever needed to know about the adult industry right now.
It's interesting. I kind of would agree a little bit with you, Peter, on this, although I don't think I necessarily thought of Cruel Intentions when that came up to play with Narek, and I believe Narissa is his sister's name. So this is interesting. I haven't watched that movie in a long time, but their relationship is definitely a little creepy.
Do we know that she's a literal sister, not just a metaphorical sister? Like everyone from Romulus is a brother and a sister now that Romulus is gone?
We don't know that. So this will be really interesting. We'll have to see how that goes. Thanks for your comment, Peter. Well, Rob Vaughn from Twitter, he says, well, that was a fun episode. The TOS Bird of Prey was a fantastic callback. I'm very intrigued by where the artifact story is going. Could this all link back to the Borg Queen and Data in First Contact? Rob, I loved the Bird of Prey as well. Although, please, can we not have this go back to the Borg Queen? I'm just not down for seeing her again.
I have to say, I'm a ship guy. I love any chance to see a new ship, and it was fun to see a modern-looking version of the old Bird of Prey. It looked great. Really excellent job on that.
I agree.
I guess we'd seen it in a trailer, so it wasn't really a surprise, but if it had been a surprise, that would have been even better.
It was great.
So Danny Brown says, another great episode of Picard. I really enjoyed the backstory of Eleanor Picard and the refugees. Visually, the episode was stunning. I loved seeing the old Romulan Bird of Prey, and the Seven reveal at the end was superb. The writers are doing a fantastic job, and props to Frakes for another greatly directed episode in his Trek repertoire. It was a beautiful episode with all those Japanese maple trees. It really drove home the samurai, Asian influence on what they were trying to go for with these newfangled Romulans.
I agree. It is very visually well done episode, and yeah, it is. It's nice to see this background a little bit. I'm really liked that aspect of this episode. Well, Jim Stoffel says, what a great episode. I love that flashback in the beginning of the episode. There's great turmoil in the universe, and only Picard and his motley crew can save the day. The episode's standouts for me were how the Romulans felt after the Federation dropped the ball, stranding them on strange planets. The Romulan who lost his head. The appearance of the old Bird of Prey, the possibility of a whole lot more androids like Soji, and the appearance of Seven of Nine. I want more. I totally cannot agree. Every time an episode ends, I think that was it. When can I get the next one?
I have to say the decapitation caught me a little bit by surprise. They don't usually get quite that graphic in Star Trek.
Yeah, I think this is a call to kind of what we're getting with just newer television and it having to have that feel of keeping up with everything else to keep the viewers. Definitely unexpected. I don't think I necessarily enjoyed it, though. But thank you, Jim.
The Seven of Nine reveal to me was a little anticlimactic, actually. Maybe we just didn't get to see enough of her. And I know it was supposed to be a teaser, of course, for the next episode. It was intriguing because she has literally let her hair down. Compared to how she looked in Voyager.
I agree.
So Karen Chuplis says, OMG, I have to watch it again. There was so much. My favorite episode yet. That was so engaging, I didn't even move. I always watch it in the AM now before work, so I won't even possibly be spoiled. I have to go back because there were at least three lines that I was like, OMG, that was a great line. Totally loved the cruise director Hollow and Rios' reaction to it. That whole scene was A++++++++. Even though I knew who was coming at the end due to the beginning credits. What a great entry. So worthy of Seven. OMG. I just loved everything about this episode. Love the opening flashback with Picard and Elnor and the subsequent ones as well. OMG, that dress down he gave Elnor on the transporter pad was awesome. In the days of 22 episodes, that would have carried on longer, at least half an episode. I love that Jean-Luc is so much more Jean-Luc with his feelings now. He's so much more expansive, as it happens to many as we age. It makes sense not only in live ways, but not being a captain or an admiral, etc. It frees him up to just be expansive. There is no image to maintain. He and Rafi had a much more natural rhythm to their relationship now. And I'm still pulling for Dr. Jurati to not be a double agent. I really like her. She and Rios had an awesome scene. My last quick take, though, is there is something about Narek's sister, quote-unquote, that is not quite right. Like, is she an artificial? I don't know. I just think they're not really siblings, as we were saying a minute ago.
Yeah, I would agree that I don't know necessarily if they are siblings. And Karen is not the first one in the comments who mentioned about Dr. Jurati being a double agent. And I never had thought of that. So this is an interesting idea. And I'm wondering if this is just simply because Commodore O, who is clearly a double agent, went up and talked to her at the Daystrom Institute. So I don't think she is a double agent. I'm hoping that she's not, but I didn't get that vibe at all. So this is a really interesting thought to me.
That's a sign of the times about contemporary television, where every single character you go, is that a double agent? Is that a double agent? Is that a double agent? You can't take any character at face value anymore.
Yeah, which is really kind of sad. So hopefully not, Karen. And I agree, there is definitely a very different vibe to Picard, but I'm really enjoying that. So we'll have to see what happens next. Joshua DeVries says, now that we're in space and we've got ourselves a crew, I'm loving the Firefly-esque feel of the episode. A great mix of drama and fun. And we get two more of Rios's holograms. I love Emmett, the gunner, and hope we see him a lot more. So many fantastic moments in this episode, especially the last scene. I have not watched Firefly except for maybe a couple episodes, so I can kind of maybe see it, but not really. Rios's holograms are fantastic. I love these different versions of himself, very narcissistic, but it's really fun.
I guess this is actually one of the things that bothers me a little bit about contemporary television, contemporary Star Trek. Can't they just turn the lights on in all the ships? I don't know why everyone has to work in the dark and in contemporary television. I know it's supposed to make it more dramatic and it really works for a lot of people, but I actually really like the feel of the Orville a lot better. I just wish they would brighten it up a bit. It's not supposed to be a terribly dark show like Discovery is, I think.
No, I don't think so, but I think right now we're kind of in that darker of the series at this point. It should brighten up, I hope.
I hope so, too. So Mark Keller says, I really like Elnor. He's the right badass for the show. Episode 4 was great, but I must admit I'm ready for Picard to begin his mission. 4 episodes is a long setup. Luckily, it looks like they're going to Free Cloud next week. I agree. I actually think this is a really long setup. I'm finding myself asking, is there ever anything actually going to happen in this show? I'm sure it will. It's just, it feels like they're really dragging out the introduction.
I can see that, and I can kind of agree, and it makes me wonder if this is going to be a longer than one season kind of story arc, and that's why it's moving at the pace that it's moving. We know there's going to be 3 seasons, roughly 10 episodes a season, so that's 30 episodes. So they've kind of, in a way, I guess, if this is going to be the story throughout, have to make it move at a slower pace. But I agree. But again, I think that's a sign of the times, where we're used to things happening so much quicker, and there's so much still episodic television out there that, like, these long story arcs, like we saw in DS9, it's just like, oh my gosh, it's so slow. I need it more and fast now. And that could also be because Discovery moves so quick and things happen so fast that you can miss things, that we're just not used to this slower pace.
Which is interesting, because for me, some of my favorite episodes of TNG are the episodes that aren't really plot driven, where there's literally nothing happening except interesting character stuff on the ship. So I don't really need stuff to happen. I'm just not sure where the show is going. Like, they want you to feel like the show is going somewhere, and yet they don't actually go anywhere yet.
I think a lot of other viewers are feeling the way you're feeling, Mark. They're kind of like, hey, can we get moving now? We'll have to see what happens. So Robert J. Geiger says, the Kuat Malat are such an intriguing concept on the face of it. The radical candor was a fun quirk, and then when they dropped the bodyguard twist, I was loving it. By the time Picard revealed that the measure of worthiness was that it be a hopeless cause, I was beyond sold. Can't wait to see where Elnor's character goes, although I do hope Evagora chooses an accent and sticks to it. I thoroughly loved this part of this episode. The Kuat Malat, it's really interesting. I completely agree with you, Robert. This candor and being open and honest with your feelings, which is completely so different from what we've seen of Romulans, aside from their anger, and definitely not Vulcan at all. But this hopeless cause is just an interesting idea, and I'm totally here for that.
I think there's an important lesson to be learned here. Whatever your hopeless cause in life, make sure you bring the muscle with you. Have an Elnor.
I agree.
So Michael Marek says, lots of people have noticed that the characters in Star Trek Picard are all broken in some way. I think that the point of the story arc, however, is that the characters on Picard's crew are all seeking redemption for failures they perceive about themselves. In fact, reclamation may be the underlying theme of the story arc. Ex-Borgs are being reclaimed as individuals. Picard, Raffi, and Rios are all trying to reclaim their honor and reclaim the values of Starfleet. Agnes is trying to reclaim her scientific field of study, unless she's a double agent. People are really intrigued by that notion, aren't they? Elnor, at first glance, may be trying to reclaim his relationship with Picard. Absolute candor reinforces this perspective.
What do you think on that? It's an interesting idea, Michael. I can definitely see where you would get this. It's very much a journey of redemption and getting back to what people want, I guess. So,
well, this was, in a way, was the big contrast between TNG and Deep Space Nine in the first place, right? In TNG, we had fairly plastic characters that we all love, but they're all fairly perfect humans. In Deep Space Nine, we get a bit more brokenness. And I think the hallmark of modern character development is to have people be broken as a starting point, so they have some sort of catharsis in their character development. And I think this is just absolutely in line with how character development is thought of in this day and age. Is that a good thing, or does it introduce too much melodrama into the show? For me, there's a fine line between healthy character development and artificially saying, you know, someone's a little too emo when they start out and they need to improve over the course of the season.
I suppose so. Well, Rhea Papagiorgio says in all caps with lots of exclamation points.
Make sure you shout this, by the way.
Okay. I want to be a warrior nun and speak with absolute candor. Rhea, I am totally on board with you, 100% down. Let's make it happen.
Who doesn't want to be a warrior nun after this episode?
I think this is really interesting because you look at these women and they are so calm and well-spoken and just at peace, but then they're like, now we'll kick your ass.
See, I'd be a pretty good Elnor just tagging along.
But I foresee maybe some warrior nun cosplay happening at STLV this year. So Rhea, I am 100% down.
Okay, Haley, here's what we have to do. You can be a warrior nun and I'll be Elnor.
There we go.
There we go.
There we go.
Wait for it, everyone. So Zorik Adamoff says, that was a fun episode. Might be my favorite so far. I really like what they're doing with the emergency holograms. Okay, that is one of the best parts of the episode. These holograms are hilarious.
They are great.
I have not had so much fun with holograms since Voyager. Yeah, this is great.
We have the EMH. We have the, I'm guessing the...
The ENH, the Emergency Navigation Hologram.
Yeah, we have...
The EGH, the Emergency Gunner Hologram.
Gunner, sure, security.
The EPH, the Emergency Psychological Hologram.
The Emergency Engineer Hologram.
Yep.
Yep. I'm intrigued at how many more there are. I mean, really.
The EHH, the Emergency Hospitality Hologram.
He's the best. Oh, this is just, it's too fun. So Zorik, I completely agree. I think these are probably everybody's favorite things so far.
What's hilarious is we all have this internal monologue in our heads. We talk with each other, you know, with ourselves all the time inside ourselves. And people do it in various ways, of course. But I love that this is like a Rios's internal monologue turned into a Greek chorus where he can literally talk with different facets of his personality out loud. It's amazing.
Except for clearly... Emmett is really the only one that he likes so far. The rest of them just annoy him. So
are you saying this is a type of self-loathing projected externally?
It could be. You know, I mean, in psychology, this is just the different aspects of his personality in holographic form and essentially confronting himself with different aspects of himself that he likes or dislikes. And clearly the ones that he dislikes, he just dismisses them. So... it's interesting. It's really fun. So I'm very excited to see more of these.
The more the better.
Yes. Well, Michael Bentley says, now that Seven of Nine has shown up, will we soon be reintroduced to her sidekick, a grown-up Naomi Wildman? And do they still play Catascot together? Now, I mentioned this because you, Zachary, are a Voyager fan. And when I read this, you thought, oh my gosh, this would be great. What do you think still?
Okay, this would make the entire season for me. I don't care if they do nothing else in the entire show. If they had Naomi Wildman show up and play a game of Catascot as an adult with Seven of Nine, I'd be happy. I care about that more than I care about Picard. No, so Naomi Wildman was an interesting character because she really came to take on some of Seven of Nine's personality traits and Borg speak, you know, using Seven of Nine as a role model, as she also had ambitions to be the captain assistant on Voyager, running messages for the captain and that, so on and so forth. It'd be fun to bring her back. I think it's a great idea.
My only concern is I think that if we do too many, oh, we're going to throw in this character, we're going to throw in this character, it just becomes a little much. I think the little ones here and there are great, but I'm really wanting these new characters to develop, and I'm really wanting to see new interactions.
Yeah, and see, I guess I'm a little on the other end of the spectrum. I like getting the band back together. I wouldn't mind seeing as many characters they can pack in and see how they can weave them together in new ways. And it's like having a Beatles reunion concert or something. It'd be awesome to get everyone back together. I don't care. Put them all in.
Mm-hmm. We'll discuss that a little bit later.
So Rebecca Skipper says, well, the Romulan civilization seems to be in the Dark Ages, similar to what Europe went through. Starfleet is still not good at following up, and their conduct is even more disappointing now that we are seeing the consequences. We've also seen this trend in TOS. Although this isn't my favorite episode, Soji's character is growing on me, and Picard is starting to resemble the captain I loved from TNG. Picard's respect for the Romulan culture is commendable, and he is still a true diplomat. I love the Romulan nuns as well. Picard's compassion for all life forms hasn't wavered, and I want him to succeed. The singular hatred towards androids makes no sense to me and feels like the weaker part of the plot.
So I agree. I think this is interesting. I never considered that it's similar to what Europe went through in the Dark Ages as far as the Romulans, but I think it's not so much necessarily that they're in the Dark Ages, is it just that they were put on a planet that maybe doesn't have all the necessary resources for them to build a community like they had on their homeworlds. But this whole consequences thing is huge. For me, Star Trek always kind of left things, especially with TOS. Oh, we'll just do this on this planet and leave. And like, they never go back. They never think of like, what's this going to do for the people on that planet? They just figure, oh, we're just leaving them for the better, when they don't necessarily always do. So I love this idea that we're getting consequences to actions of previous things. So I'm really excited by that. Yeah, Picard's still trying to be that diplomat that we know him to be.
The notion of a Dark Ages is an interesting one. In a way, you can see why some Romulans would be pushing towards a return to things they know as Romulan, like consolidating their power and rebuilding an empire. It's like at least some Romulans, a non-trivial number of Romulans, are going to be pushing for a Romulan renaissance, much like we needed after the Dark Ages. That's an interesting analogy.
Very much so. Well, Chris Chaplin says, Picard is a man marked by guilt, and this episode materialized that guilt in two characters, Elnor and the former Romulan senator. His speech to Picard in the restaurant was truly sad because he revealed how vulnerable he and his people were when Picard addressed the Senate in their moment of quote-unquote weakness. The resentment, the bitterness, it all rings reasonable, and Picard's hubris to tear off the racism sign, stomp on it, and expect service reveals a man who still acts as if he's the commanding officer aboard the flagship, shielded by carpeted walls and the lulling hum of the engine. One of my favorite little moments in the episode is when Picard begins issuing orders on the bridge. It felt so familiar and welcome, and yet it showed that Picard is a man stuck acting from his past self. I can't wait to see how he grows going forward. And in response to this, I wanted to mention that Justin Ozer says, I think he took the sign down and stepped on it to anger the Romulans in the area enough to challenge him to a fight so Elnor could step in to protect him and then want to join his quest. It's also a statement he's making about prejudice, but I mostly saw it as trying to convince Elnor to join him. And Chris, I have to agree with you. I think this is one of those scenes that was really well done and just kind of shows exactly where Romulans are at and how they're feeling. We already know from the episode that there's a faction of Romulans who really are just fed up with everything and want to go back and be the angry Starfleet. And clearly any humans that are on their planet with them. But I kind of liked that aspect of this because, again, it's showing those consequences and it's very much a social commentary on what is going on in this country and others currently at the moment, which Star Trek has always tried to do.
As Rios might say, Picard has some cojones standing among a group of Romulans, taking this Romulans only sign and throwing it on the ground in front of them. Pretty ballsy move for our former captain.
I agree.
Brian Sherman tells us, in the Doctor Who episode, School Reunion, which I haven't seen, by the way, the Doctor learns that for all the good he may do sometimes, you leave people behind and don't realize the damage you have done. I was reminded of this episode watching the hurt in Elnor when Picard returns and with J.L. returning of what befell the colony he had such hope for. This was a phenomenal episode and has opened up a whole new universe of storytelling possibilities. My only complaint is that having Jerry Ryan's name in the credits blew the surprise. But that may still go down as the greatest entrance in franchise history.
I agree. We all knew that Jerry Ryan was coming back, but we didn't know exactly when. But I would agree with you, Brian. Having her name in the opening credits, kind of you're like, oh, okay, so she's going to be in this episode. So like the entire time you're sitting there waiting for her to show up. And it kind of takes it out of it.
There's something to be said for waiting until the end to put credits rather than putting credits at the beginning.
I agree. I'm definitely giving my credits at the end and not at the beginning kind of person. Well, Duncan Barrett says, I really loved this episode. My favorite scene was the conference, quote unquote, in the holographic chateau, a lovely callback to TNG, but with such a different gang of characters. There's a lot of humor from Rios, Raffi, and Jurati. I especially love Allison Pill, who seems to be channeling Ellen DeGeneres. I really like the nuns and the concept of absolute candor, and Elnor's anger adds an interesting element to the mix. However, for me, this episode includes the first tonal misstep of the series with the decapitation. He could have killed him, and we get the Indiana Jones moment, but chopping his head off seemed gratuitous to me, even if it's to set up the character. Otherwise, a great episode, and can't wait for more 7 of 9. I agree. I liked the hollow office that Picard set up on the ship and that he kind of sits down and talks with everybody. You and I had talked about this yesterday in preparation, and I kind of like that, you know, he hasn't set up his ready room from the D or the E because that would be too emotionally tying, not only for Picard himself, but for us fans. And so he has somewhat emotional ties to his study in at the chateau, but it never felt like home, so it's not super emotional. So if the ship blows up and his holographic study from the chateau is gone, it's not as big of a deal as, like, you know, something happens and then he loses his quote-unquote ready room again from the D or the E.
It's an intriguing tension and a almost duality in Picard's temperament. On the one hand, he says he's never felt at home on his vineyard, which is part of his motivation for wanting to get out back out into space. And what does he do the second he gets there? Creates a holographic version of his vineyard. So which is it, Picard?
Who knows? He's a man in turmoil.
So Daniel Huckfield tells us this episode flew by, a very Star Trek episode with the twist of the new TV model. I feel the Borg Cube storyline is beginning to develop in an interesting direction with the mention of all the synths, and this opens up a potentially wide-ranging possibilities for the whole show. Getting to Free Cloud feels like the new search for Spock on Discovery, in that it may well take most of the series. Overall, another satisfying episode.
I'm very interested by this Free Cloud. You know, in the trailer for next week's episode, we see the characters wearing these very outrageous, outlandish outfits, and I'm so curious about what all is going to happen.
It feels to me like a little bit of Star Wars creep into Star Trek. Like we have to have our canteen scene where everyone's gambling and drinking and playing games. And it's, you know, it's licentiousness or it's a casino or it's something like that. I'm not sure Star Trek really needs that. But I worry a bit that that doesn't actually help anything in Star Trek. But
what better place for Bruce Maddox, a man who clearly is hiding out because of what he's created, what better place for him to hide on than a planet clearly ruled by ruffians and Orions and who knows what else?
I do think if you're looking for fair casino games, you go looking for synthetic or android blackjack dealers.
That would probably be a wise choice.
That's why he's on FreeCloud.
Well, Matthew Dean says, this was my favorite episode so far. Love the way the show is adding layers to our understanding of the Romulans and really enjoying the gradual unfurling of the story. For me, this is already the best Trek since at least the end of Voyager and probably since DS9 ended. My only minor complaint is I found the battle with the Warbird a bit anticlimactic. However, I'm not watching this for space battles, so no big deal. I agree with you, Matthew, that like the battle with the Warbird was a little kind of slow. And I think part of that's just because it was broken up with what was going on Vashti with Elnor and Picard and the Romulan senator. So, but other than that, I can see how you'd be excited that this gradual, as you call it, unfurling of the story can really appeal to some people who kind of like that slower paced, we're just going to get little here, little here, little here, and it leaves you wondering. I'm a big mystery reader. Crime novel reader, so that gradualness kind of appeals to me on a level as well. So I totally understand where you're coming from, and I love that we are getting a little bit more into Romulan culture, which we never really had before because, again, we've been fighting with them. So this is kind of nice to see these little nuances to their culture.
Yeah, we've talked about this a few times. Like, you'll be sitting here reading a mystery novel, and I'll be sitting here reading something else. I just don't have the attention span for interesting plot twists and turns and long development of plots that you do. So those are the things that are really bothering me about the show. But other people seem to be really excited by that slow reveal that's going on.
And I wonder if, you know, I love doing puzzles. And so to me, a mystery novel and this just gradual learning, it's like putting the pieces and finding those pieces and making that bigger picture. So listeners, if you are a puzzle person and this really appeals to you and this idea of just slowly learning different things about different characters and about the story really appeals to you, I'm in your camp.
Yeah, and I'm always asking, like, what's the moral? What's the morality play? What's the fable? What's the sort of platonic ideal takeaway? Like, what am I supposed to get out of this episode? Not just what am I supposed to piece together, but what am I supposed to learn from it?
Gotcha.
So Richard, a first-time commenter from Twitter, says, unexpected. Star Trek Picard has shown it as masterfully concealed circumstances of what had been revealed in the trailers. What, upon close examination, led to confusion for those anticipating this or that, has still managed to maintain surprise and spontaneity for the series.
I would agree. And thank you, Richard, for commenting for the first time. That's exciting. Thank you.
Well, it's not all roses and sunshine. We do have some critiques and concerns about either this episode or the direction of Picard as a whole. And we're going to talk about some of those concerns that you raised with us in the Babel Conference. Benjamin Matherly says, seems strange that the entire Romulan Empire was pinning all their hope on Picard for evacuation. Don't the Romulans have ships? Couldn't they also evacuate as many possible instead of blaming it all on Picard? I definitely think it's valid for Elnor to be mad, as we've seen that Picard dropped everything when he left Starfleet. I love this episode. 7 of 9. So there was a little positive comment at the end there. But I agree, there's something here that doesn't really make sense. If there were several years, if we knew several years in advance that, you're rolling your eyes at me because we've been talking about this behind the scenes off the microphone here. But if we knew for years in advance that the Romulan star was going to go Nova and the Romulans have a fleet of their own, why exactly do they need Picard to come to their rescue? Can't they rescue themselves? I completely understand this sentiment, Benjamin. I'm with you on this one.
Yeah, so we have been talking about this, Benjamin, off mic. Yes, and have. If anyone would like to continue the conversation with me, please shout out to me either in the Babel Conference or on Twitter, and we can discuss this.
You can all gang up on me. It's okay.
I agree, however, that yes, it does seem feasible that the Romulans would be able to get their own people off. I mean, from TNG, we know that a Romulan warbird is huge. It's bigger than the Enterprise D. And so clearly they could potentially have the space to get some other people off. But I think we do have to remember that Romulus was a 10-planet system. So we don't know how many of those were occupied versus unoccupied. And so clearly there are millions of people in this system that they have to get out. And who knows what was going on? Yeah. Who knows what was going on in with their, you know, own military and things like that. Maybe not necessarily all their ships were at home or had the ability to come home. Maybe they were still off fighting battles and picking on people because it's the Romulans at this point. So it is an interesting idea that, you know, clearly so many were pinning their hopes on Picard rescuing them and getting them to somewhere else. And maybe Vashti was just like a holdover until they could get them into a system that was unoccupied, but had plenty of planets that would be able to sustain life. So it is an interesting idea. And I think sets up more of what's to come. Well, Janessa, and I apologize if I do not say your name right, but Janessa Ciarda, and you can correct me.
Or Ciarda, we don't know.
Yeah. Having finished the episode a second time, I have to say everything with Narek in it creeped me out. His sister's apparent sexual interest in her own brother didn't help. On the other hand, the Vashti scenes were a visual and auditory delight. The music really pulled me in, and some of the colors looked painted rather than shot with a camera. I agree with you, Janessa. I'm not Team Narek. I know there's this thing going around of whether Narek's hot or not. I say not. And I don't really know if they're brother and sister. I'm kind of doubting it, but she is really kind of even more creepy than Narek.
I have to say, this is one of the concerns I agree with. I just find the Narek scenes completely snore-worthy. They're not resonating with me at all.
I agree.
For what it's worth, which is not very much. So Matthew Pittard says, someone asked me the other day about this show. They had yet to see it and asked for my opinion. I didn't want to give any spoiler feedback, so I said, choppy, it can jump around. This episode was a little better in that regard, but I could still feel that chop occasionally. Picard this week was a little better, but wow, does he bring the hurt on himself. Don't we all? From the removal of the no Romulan sign to the beaming out at the last second, obviously to give that aging bird of prey time to warp in. Yeah, it was in the script. We are treated to Picard, who perhaps is getting slightly better when talking to people. Is it just me, or is the first Australian accented character we've ever had in Star Trek, even if he is an elf? I think that's right. I don't remember another Australian accented character in Star Trek.
I'm sure we've had an Australian actor who, you know, made an English, you know, accent and got rid of his accent, but that would do some digging on Memory Alpha. I agree that it can feel kind of choppy, Matthew, but I feel more that way with Discovery in a lot of aspects, just because it moves so fast. But thank you for your critique. I think that it is really interesting of the pacing of this show. And yeah, Picard clearly is forgetting his age, I think. Well, Duncan Barrett says, the Borg cube scenes are starting to drag a bit. I like Narek and I like Soji, but their fomance is hard to invest in, and his sister just feels like she belongs in a different show. Hoping something major kicks off there soon, as it feels a bit like they're killing time waiting for the A-plot to catch up with them. I agree, Duncan. I'm intrigued by clearly how the Romulans got this Borg cube and why they're doing what they're doing. But other than that, the storyline with the Borg cube is kind of slow. And just doesn't really add much to the A-plot of why Picard is, you know, aside from him wanting to find Soji, I don't get the rest of it.
I like that Duncan calls this a fomance, because I agree, Narek and Soji have no actual on-screen chemistry together, in my mind.
Yeah.
The romance falls a little flat for me.
Well, it's not really a romance. I mean, he's faking her.
Right.
So, you know, he's pretending to be in love with her. I don't think he genuinely is, even though he said it. because he's trying to slowly get her to wake up and realize what she is and lead them to apparently all the others. So he's just playing her.
Well, Rhys Morgan tells us, as much as I'm loving Picard, I'm starting to have some problems with the forward momentum of the show, or lack thereof. It is interesting how we are learning more about the Romulan resettlement little by little as the show goes on, but we are 4 episodes in now and the actual story is moving at a snail's pace. Luckily, Picard is such a dramatic character. I'd be happy watching him for an hour drinking tea with his dog. Yeah, I'd be down with that. An hour with Picard and number one. And with some tea. Yeah, Patrick Stewart, I mean, could basically read a grocery list and it would be interesting to me.
The phone book.
The phone book, exactly. Yes. Some actors are just like that. Doesn't matter what they're saying. So, yes, I do actually think largely this is Patrick Stewart carrying the show as much as we're loving some of the other characters, maybe with the EMHs. But, yeah, it is the Patrick Stewart show for sure.
Well, and it is interesting because, you know, we've heard from some people that were able to go to the premiere in Hollywood. They got to see the first 3 episodes and they came out saying the first 3 episodes are essentially the pilot, just broken up. And so it is, I think, now really hopefully going to start picking up in pace with what's going on with the storyline. So I agree with you, Rhys, that it has been slow, but I think that was purposely done. Well, Chris Aggie says, I still have my problems with the cube scenes. Still not into what happens there because I always have the feeling that I know too less. I like a good mystery, but I need to be involved. And for that, I have to know at least something. But I have the hope that this will be rectified in the next episode or episodes, and we are getting somewhere. Besides that, a great episode. I still like the first episode best, but that one is a close second. A space battle, 7 of 9, multiple emergency holograms, Romulan warrior nuns, and Elrond with a sword. His name is Elrond, isn't it? I mean, what's not to like about all that? I agree. He is a little Lord of the Rings kind of elf looking. Maybe if he cuts his hair, that would help, and he'd appear more Romulan to me. Chris, you're not alone, clearly, as some other comments have said, that the cube stuff just really isn't that intriguing for most people. And I agree with you that there isn't enough to kind of conjecture as to why we keep going to the Borg cube. And it would be nice to know a little something more just to keep the intrigue in that storyline going forward. I look at it as clearly the Romulans that had been assimilated, something went wrong and they weren't fully assimilated. And I think that's where this is going. Something's up with them.
Well, I think the interesting thing about the Borg cube as a setting for the show was its imminent danger. The fact that at any given moment you might be assimilated on the Borg cube. And if that's not really a big concern, and they've had 16 years without an assimilation, what is there to worry about on this Borg cube? It's not, I mean, something's going to happen, obviously. I mean, we're only 4 episodes into the season, so I'm sure it will amp up here a bit. But for now, it's like, okay, we're on a Borg cube where there's no danger of anything. It doesn't have that urgency that the Best of Both Worlds had when you're on the Borg cube.
Well, and again, I think that's just because, you know, as I said, this cube in particular has been left. It is not part of the collective anymore. There is that potential risk that, you know, if somehow the collective finds out this Borg cube is being worked on and something activates it, then potentially they could come back. But I'm really kind of hoping not. Like, I really don't want any more Borg storyline. I'm good. I'm done. No more.
So you've had your fill of basically Borg zombies that just come at you and come at you and come at you. And, you know, ever since they deviated away from that, I feel like the Borg weren't as scary and weren't as interesting and weren't as, you know, didn't have the dramatic tension that you saw when they were first introduced, and they just kept coming no matter what you did. And I wonder if they're going to go that direction with it, or if they're going to continue to veer away from that as they've done ever since the Borg and Voyager.
Yeah, I'm done with it. So I'm okay. We don't need more of that. Thank you, Chris.
Liam Smart, my new co-host over on To the Journey, says, okay, so I've slept on it, and now to give my honest opinion. Before I say it, know that I do like Picard, the show. This episode I struggled with. It started off good with a Romulan refugee planet, but then as soon as it got to the holographic chateau, I found it so hard to concentrate with the music in the background, and it put me off. Then I was just grumpy for the rest of the episode. I'm finding it very slow, and I find my mind wanders off a lot. We're 40% of the way through, and we're still sort of nowhere. I also find from the fan base that a lot of people are just in it for the cameos and nostalgia, and that is bugging me. That being said, there are a lot of good things. I enjoyed Elnor, or Elrond, the Australian Romulan. The variety of accents is refreshing. Yes, it is. I enjoyed jerk-like Picard, and Raffi is awesome. I love her character. Yes, also one of the highlights of the season so far that we haven't mentioned. Right now, Picard sits fifth in my ranking of Star Trek series. I'm curious what Liam's other Liam's hierarchy of Star Trek series is. I'll have to ask him about that next time we record To the Journey.
Well, do you want to address anything in what Liam is saying here, since he's your co-host?
Just that I agree. I think, you know, that's an interesting way to put it. We're 40% of the way through the season, halfway through, and very little is actually happening. The pieces aren't really coming together. They're not really leaving a lot of wiggle room for the show to go anywhere in six more episodes. And also, that's something that bugs me about television these days in general, these short seasons, these 10 episode seasons. You don't carve out any wiggle room just to have a standalone, one-off, character-driven episode that's not related to everything else. And Discovery started to do that a little bit in its later episodes, just carving out little one-off episodes that aren't directly related to the A-plot. I'd like to see a lot more of those, and I just worry that, yeah, with six episodes to go, almost halfway through the season, where is this really going to go? Of course, it's not really going to go anywhere. They don't want to wrap it up at the end of the season. They want to get you into season two, right? The whole point is not to wrap it up in six more episodes. The point is to get you into season two and keep you coming back and paying that $6 a month.
Exactly. Well, Zachary, let's move on to some last words here.
Well, Stephen Dawson says, what a journey this is for Picard, a journey that is part two of his retirement. Yeah, this is an interesting point. I want to interject this here. It's not just retirement. This is like retirement. This is retirement from his retirement. This is that's what life should be like. Why would you want to retire on a chateau? Get back on the ship and go do something. I think that's a great metaphor for life. But Stephen says, in part one, he was still in charge of his vineyard with only the playful restraint likely imposed by the COO, Laris. In part two, Picard now has to genuinely integrate. He may have made a plethora of ethically sound decisions in his Starfleet days, but now he's learning that empathy is needed when you no longer have command. This is a journey to save a life, but it's also a journey where Picard must learn that the loyalty he's so used to receiving must now be derived from more than mere duty. This is a really interesting point. Picard is used to just immediately getting respect, getting his way, getting obedience, getting, you know, it's very harmonious because Picard creates that harmony because he's the unifying factor. And now he has to learn to essentially play nice with others and be deferential in a way he's never had to do or hasn't had to do since his younger Starfleet days. He had to do that at some point, otherwise he would never have risen to the rank of captain in the first place. It's interesting to see Picard have to relearn what it's like to move back up the hierarchy and earn respect again at this stage in life.
I agree. It's very interesting. I didn't think of it as a part two in his journey. So thank you, Stephen, for kind of mentioning that. That's an interesting take on this. Well, Karen Hosh says, man, Picard is really taking some hits in this show, yet he is slow to learn, keeping up his I'm Picard, surely you must love me attitude for most of the episode. I like that he refuses to fight the senator in the end and gets mad when Elnor, I almost typed Elrond, kills him. That finally is like the Picard we know and love because violence is never his first choice. I love Jurati in this episode, though I hope they don't overdo it and turn her into the comic relief like they did with Tilly. I almost wish Seven of Nine hadn't been in the trailer. That way the ending would have been even better. I agree with you, Karen. I definitely got that vibe of like, well, I'm Picard and clearly you must all still love me. But I think he kind of was carrying that attitude on purpose. Again, like Justin said earlier and a few other people in the Babel conference commented that I think he was doing that to get Elnor to join his cause because he knew there was no other way Elnor was going to do it and that he clearly can't do this journey and protect himself without somebody young there to do it for him, because he's realizing his age. He's not, you know, after that attack at the chateau, you know, he realizes, I'm not as young and agile and able to fight back as much as I was able to. I need somebody young to be my guns, essentially. And I don't have anybody else right now who can do that for me. So I think he was purposely carrying that attitude walking into that bar and expecting to be served, because he knew he was going to make people mad. Because earlier in the episode, you know, Raffi's like, they don't like you anymore. They're not happy you're going to be here. And I agree with your idea on Jurati and hopefully not being the comedic relief. I like that she's a little just kind of uncomfortable around other people, unless clearly they're other scientists. And a lot of people in the scientific field can kind of be that way. They're a little more introverted and a little more awkward. But I do hope that she does kind of not become that comedic relief, just like you said.
You know what the 7 of 9 reveal reminds me of? It reminds me of the way in which the destruction of the Enterprise in the search for Spock was supposed to be a surprise, but then they put it in the trailer and everyone knew about it beforehand.
That's why I was saying, you know, it would have been nice to have known, to not have known that she was going to be appearing at all. If we hadn't got that, it would have been like, oh my gosh, it's 7? What is she doing here? Now it was like, okay, we know she's going to show up. We just don't know what episode. So there's still some element of surprise, but it's like not as big of a deal.
I think this was a tactical mistake on their part, really, because I think just merely having Picard come back was absolutely enough to get all the Star Trek fans on board with Star Trek Picard. You didn't need 7 of 9 to get any more excitement for Star Trek Picard. Having that be a reveal would have been awesome in the moment, 4 weeks into the show. Oh my God, 7 of 9's on the show too. Now we really have to start watching. I think that was a blown opportunity there completely.
I completely agree. As someone who was in the audience at STLV when Patrick Stewart came out and said that he was bringing the character back, the entire room lit up. And I think having that kind of response to 7 and to Troy and Riker, because we know they're coming at some point, it would have been nice to have had that same kind of feel as what was going on in that room when he came out on stage and said that Picard was coming back. That like overwhelming, like utter excitement that was just shared collectively about with everyone in that room.
Speaking of Riker and Troy, I had presumed from the trailers that they were on Earth, but now that Picard is off on the journey, I am wondering, are they living on Beta Zed? That would make sense.
That's a good idea. Good thought. We'll have to wait and see, listeners. Okay, well, Zachary, so how do you think that fans responded to this episode of Picard?
I would say the comments were largely positive, like our response was when we watched the episode. I'd say there's genuine concerns about the pacing of the season, maybe some of the character emphasis, but largely positive. How could it not be? We get to see Captain Picard or Admiral Picard or whoever he is now, former Admiral Picard. How do we refer to him now, by the way?
Picard.
Just Picard.
Captain Picard because he's not captain. Picard. Rios is captain. He's not Admiral because he resigned. So, I mean, you could say retired Admiral, but that's a mouthful.
It is. Just Picard, I guess.
Yeah.
So we get to see Picard again. So I can't imagine the feedback is going to be anything other than largely positive, no matter where the show goes. But I'm old school. I grew up in the 90s, so I'm used to episodic television, and I miss the kind of lightheartedness of episodic television in the 90s, and maybe even some of the, you know, sitcom elements of TNG from the late 80s. So I miss those things. I lament those things in television. I think they make things, everything a little heavier than it needs to be, and that's not what I got out of Star Trek. I don't get heaviness from it. I get upliftedness from Star Trek, and I wish I had a little more of that. And I think fans largely share some of that concern. I also hear a little concern about the derivative nature of these Romulan warrior nuns. They're samurais or they're elves. Is that really an original idea that Star Trek is bringing to the table, or is it a largely derivative idea? I worry about some of the lack of innovation in those ideas, and I hear that from fan response as well.
I would agree with you there. I think for the most part, everybody's positive. We all have like little concerns, little things that we just don't quite feel works, but that's to be expected. And it's totally understandable with anything that you're watching these days. You're not going to love every aspect of everything. And that's okay to not love everything. You shouldn't necessarily sit here and completely loathe it, hate it to the degree that some people do. And that's totally fine if you don't like it. You're allowed to not like or allowed to like something no matter what. But I think that overall, most fans are really positive about it. And I think that's just the excitement over it. And the interest and intrigue as to where this story is going is really, really great. And I'm so glad that other fans are enjoying some of these new characters that we're getting and wanting to know more about new characters. Because again, like I said, I think having newer characters is better than saying, oh, we're just going to bring the gang back. And which is fine too. But I think having new characters on this new journey, this new kind of different area that Picard is in at this time, he can't have just anybody that he's known from his past. I think he's got to have people who have a little bit of a seediness to them, because clearly, as our next episode is showing, we're going to clearly a seedy planet. And I don't think Riker and Troy and Geordi and Worf and whatnot would necessarily fit into that.
Can't you picture Geordi there being as awkward as you can possibly imagine trying to fit in the seedy environment?
As much as I love Geordi, I just don't see, I don't see it working.
You know, as you were talking, it occurs to me just how easy it is for, frankly, we old timers, for lack of a better word, you know, we watched TNG when it was on, we look at it with rose colored glasses. We forget some of the truly awkward, painful to watch moments of the first season of TNG, or from the original series, or from Voyager, from anything. You know, we romanticize it a bit and we forget that, yeah, a show really does take a while to find its footing. And four episodes in, it's going to have a little bit of painfulness as they're trying to feel it all out together. So, you know, cut them some slack, everyone.
Exactly. I think that that's very much the case in so many television shows where you just love everything from the get-go nowadays. There's still shows that take a while to find their footing and they don't necessarily all work out from the very start. So if like we said, this is very much the story's kind of going to transcend all three seasons, 30 episodes, that's just a little more than what a season 1, 2, 3, 4 of TNG would have been, with 20 plus, 26, 27 episodes. I can see how they want to kind of have it at a slower pace and kind of take their time developing some of this, just because there's only going to be 30 episodes, guys, probably.
So the only question I have for you, because you're better prepared to answer this about me than anyone in my life, am I a Rios character? I identify with Rios a lot. I'm a little bit of a loner. I like reading existentialist philosophy. I have internal monologues like Rios does.
I can definitely see it.
I would pull a piece of shrapnel out of my own shoulder.
You'd have your EMH do it?
Yes. The EZH, the emergency Zach hologram, yeah.
Oh, boy. I don't know if I could live with all of those.
It'd be a bit much. One of me is a bit much for you already, I'm sure.
So, I could definitely see that. Well, listeners, thank you so much for all of your comments on the Absolute Candor. Zach and I have had a joy reading your comments this week. So, be sure to check out all our Star Trek Picard coverage in the main feed for The Line and in the Trek FM master feed. You can catch full analysis on The Line main show with Chrissy, Justin, and Brandon. Our episode commentary show Tracks on The Line with Mike and Max.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Star Trek Picard, and the best place to do that is in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where we will collect your feedback for postcards. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM, or send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Line.
Well, Zachary, it was fun talking about Star Trek Picard with you today. So thank you again for being here. Where can people find you online?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show dedicated to Star Trek and philosophy. You can also find me on To the Journey, our show dedicated to Star Trek Voyager, if you want to hear my thoughts on Seven of Nine in general. And you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Frueling.
And you can find me on Twitter at Trekkie01D. I'm also in the Babel Conference from time to time, so you can find me there. And if you'd like to hear my thoughts besides postcards on Star Trek Picard, you can find me elsewhere in the podcasting world. If you'd like to know more, please just ask me on Twitter. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. Thanks to our associate producer, Norman C. Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line. Join us very soon for another episode of Postcards on the Line, right after the next episode of Star Trek Picard, Stardust City Rag, air. Hailing frequencies open.